Attention across the Americas turned to Honduras this year as military forces staged a coup d'etat against left-leaning President Manuel Zelaya in June 2009. Currently, Zelaya is held up at the Brazilian embassy in Honduras, while supporters have staged multiple street demonstrations in recent months in opposition to the first military coup in Central America in recent history. Journalist Laura Julie Perrault, writer for La Presse, the largest French-language daily newspaper in North America, recently visited Honduras, reporting on the current political crisis in the country. I had the opportunity to speak with Laura Julie for CKUT Radio in Montreal.
I was sent to Honduras at the beginning of December, a few days after Honduras had just held elections that were organized basically by the regime that came out of the coup. So the idea was to try to see how the country was affected by the events that happened since the 28th of June, which was the time that Zelaya was kicked out of the country, Manu Militari, and sent to Costa Rica, and then these elections, which a few countries have recognized as a way to turn the page and bring back constitutional order to Honduras, but which, I mean, for many people stays a very dubious election, considering that a big part of the population was boycotted it. So my job was to see how is this country doing after all this, and how deeply affected was it by it. So the first thing I saw when I arrived at the airport was basically army all over the place, a lot of police, even traffic police had huge weapons. I mean, we're talking about automatic rifle, AK-47. Well, they're just doing traffic. So right away, you feel, and I was told by Hondurans after that this never happened. So that you felt already that it was a more militarized place than it probably used to be. And then the second thing is every single wall in the capital was the scene of the battle between two Honduras that have come out of the coup, which basically was the group who calls themselves the Resistencia, which are close to Zelaya and were against the coup, and the gang that was basically very pro-removing Zelaya and who are called golpista, or supporters of the coup, but which is basically the derogative term for them, or they like to call themselves the blancos. So on every wall, you had graffitis who were talking to each other. Basically, get out golpista, get out resistencia. You could really see like the struggle. And it's very much a struggle between the right and the left in that country, where you can really see almost a gap between the two, like a huge void where these two groups don't talk to each other at all. So that you could see everywhere in the country. That really jumped in my face, I have to say.
The city itself has, and Honduras, since the coup, has been quite militarized. There's been many reports of police beating back protesters in the capital, protesters who had gathered in support of Zelaya, but generally there'd been a sense of militarism. I'm just wondering, you described that when you arrived, did people talk about that? Was that a topic of discussion? Is it something new for Honduras?
Well, Honduras, I mean, of all Central American countries, was probably the one with the least violent political past, if you can compare it to Nicaragua, or I mean to the neighbors. So a lot of people were telling me about the days that followed the coup and how it felt to have the army all over the streets. But one thing that was interesting is that you would have this kind of tale coming out of the barrios and the very poor neighborhood or the more popular neighborhood, but then you would talk from people from the elite, and they had no idea what we were talking about when we talked about military presence. Because basically, the military didn't go to the rich neighborhood. They didn't enforce the same way the curfews in the rich neighborhood than they did in the poorer neighborhood, who were more sympathetic in general to Zelaya. So you could even see in the treatment of the military, of the population, there was again this gap between the two sides. So I met lots of very educated and very people very interested in politics in their own country, that because they come from a specific background, a bit more privileged, had no idea what I was talking about when I was talking about violation of human rights that had been reported by Human Rights Watch, by Amnesty International, by the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. I mean, they all came up with stories of people being killed during demonstration, being hurt. I heard lots and lots of stories of journalists who were being, even a Reuters journalist, independent documentary makers, and even foreign journalists who had lots of trouble with the military during the demonstration. So these were tales that you could get like firsthand. And on the other side, you had a whole part of the country that had never heard of these stories. So, and since after the coup, most of the pro-Zelaya media were closed down, and they're the one who were reporting on this. The pro-coup media didn't say a word about them. So what was difficult, actually, as a journalist, was to get the middle story, because you had really the really pro Zelaya story, where everything that happens in a country is definitely repression against an opponent of the coup. And then you have the other media where every day putting on people the justification of the coup and how this was done constitutionally, even if it's not you can verify that with the facts. So it's a very interesting situation in that sense, that there's basically two different stories.
From the media vantage point, can you maybe talk about the situation of journalists now? I mean, what was your sense? There is many reports that talked about clamping down on different media outlets sympathetic to Zelaya. Did you learn about that? Did you hear about that?
Yeah, well, I went to meet the journalists from Radio Globo. I talked to some journalists also of El Libertador, which was basically a newspaper that was pro-Zelaya. And all of them felt very harassed. They felt that they didn't have much... they knew that no matter what they would do, like once in a while, they get checked by the police, lots of security forces showing up in the middle of the office. Even if they have ghost office, they still find them. There were stories also of sexual harassment by the security forces on some of the women who were working there. The woman who worked as my translator was herself harassed by the police. I mean, she's an American citizen, and she was basically beaten up, and her camera was broken because she was considered too pro-resistencia compared to other journalists. So the Radio Globo people told me that basically they were doing self-censorship because they were told by the authorities that any incitation to demonstration or to violence would be basically coming down with major repression. So they were, and they were telling me, like the Radio Globo journalist I met was talking to me about the day after the coup, where basically the army came inside the Radio Globo office and lined up all the people who were on air and put a gun to their head, ransacked the office, and then left. It left a pretty strong stigma on them, and also just like on how do you do your job after going to this kind of fear. Yes, exactly. So
you talked about two Honduras, two views. In visiting popular areas, what was that story? What did you take from those visits, the vision, the idea of Honduras that people had taken to the streets for, supported Zelaya for? He's a figure, but a lot of people in Honduras, I would imagine, are part of a broader movement to try to institute some sort of different social economic policy and situation in the country. What was that vision? What did you hear?
Well, what I heard from people, I mean, you had the very, very poor people. I mean, Zelaya was doing lots and lots of promises. Come to the presidential palace and I'll give you a job. There was lots of populist measures that he was taking. Some people told me about that and saying that they thought it was great. Also, he raised the minimum income, minimum wage. But what I saw also was a lot of people telling me, well, you know, it was nice to do so, but by doing so, the sweatshop that I work for closed down. And they blame Zelaya's measure for it. So even among the poorer people, there was kind of mixed reviews on Zelaya. So some people actually were not big supporters of Zelaya, but became supporters of him because they saw what the coup organizers did. It was really mixed reviews. Like Zelaya was definitely not like a, I wouldn't say he was like 100% love in the barrios or anything like that, but his idea of wanting to change the constitution, which basically was a justification by the coup organizers, had quite a bit of appeal among the poorer classes, but also the left-wing intellectuals. So you would see among the Resistencia, lots of singers, poets, writers, lots of artists joined in. And when I was there, actually, all the Resistencia events that were left were mostly concerts in smaller villages and things like that. So still, even if we were like almost 3 months after the coup, even if the election had gone through, you could still see that there was a bit of activity on that side. So you had exactly this coalition of workers or people without jobs, and then these intellectuals. And then on the other side, you had all the business elite. You had basically the professionals. And so you could really see easily who was from which side.
What was polarizing people, from your impression?
Well, I think the fact that they were getting, like, people were getting totally different version of what was happening. I mean, obviously, for the poor people who saw this president, I mean, when Zelaya came to power, he came to power on a conservative platform. And during the years, he became closer and closer and closer to Hugo Chavez. And so he was bringing about like a lot of measures that looked a lot like some of the measures that Chavez has taken in Venezuela. Well, the raising the minimum wage, there was lots also of talking of collaboration with Venezuela. So for the poorer people, that didn't bother them so much. But on the upper class level, they were really scared of what implication it could have. They were really scared that Zelaya was trying to become a second Chavez. And so I think that's one of the things that polarized the country the most. But after the coup, I would say the coup itself is what polarized people. So people who had felt that they were cheated because someone took their president and kicked him out of the country, and people who thought that this was the right thing to do in order not to end up with a left-wing dictator. I mean, that's so, I mean, we're talking about, you know, like people who could not agree on the same narrative of what was happening to their country. So I think when I was there, it was still the coup that was polarizing what people were thinking about that what was going sense. On. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Something comes to mind, which is Aristide in Haiti. That was one of the major policy changes that Aristide put forward, was to raise the minimum wage. And that had an impact also on the sweatshop industry in Haiti, corporations from Quebec specifically. So I'm just finding it interesting that in the past decade, the two coups in the Americas that, you know, you could illustrate publicly were military coups of some sort in Honduras and before that, Haiti, the leaders of both of those countries, Zelaya in Honduras and Aristide in Haiti, had risen the minimum wage. It seems to be a key issue. So I guess that would tie into the role of corporations in Quebec, Canada, the United States, in the economies of Latin America, of Central America. How central was that from your vantage point to the economic situation in the country in Honduras and the conditions that led to the coup and also linked to the policies of Zelaya? I mean, feel free to mention Haiti if you want to, because I just think it's an interesting parallel, but the corporate role.
Well, I mean, I would call it more the business elite role than the corporate role. If you talk to any Hondurans, they will tell you that there's only a handful of families in Honduras that are holding all the economic power. And so these people are very close to the Western corporation. So for sure, I mean, there was no secret that these powerful families, unfortunately, I forget the exact number, but I think there are 10, that these 10 powerful families that everybody in Honduras can name, you know, on like the top of their head, just like exactly the, like they had a huge pull, and they were, they have been publicly supporting what happened with the coup. So it's obvious that this happened. And it was interesting also talking to the people who were laid off after the coup. You know, they were saying that the narrative they were getting from their bosses when they were laying them off was very complicated. One day was the economic crisis in the US. The second day it was, oh, because we raised minimum wage. And the third day was like, oh, the instability created by the coup. So they were saying that it was interesting to see that from day to day, the whole why are we closing down reason was totally changing, but it seemed that it'd been planned for a while that certain things were going to happen. So that was the perception from the ground. I didn't have time to investigate just how much the corporation, unfortunately 5 days is quite short to do that kind of work, but it was clear in people's mind that the corporation were really close to those who deposed Zelaya.
But also we're talking about different types of economies. I mean, we could talk about an economy that's self-sufficient or an economy that's dependent. I would imagine that some of Zelaya's policies, if he was being linked to Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, were attempting, at least maybe in rhetoric, to move towards a more self-sufficient style of economy. Was this a subject that came up?
Not so much, but of course there's a huge worry for the poor population of Honduras, that their entire economy is dependent on the American economy. We're talking about 70% of the exports of Honduras go to the U.S. I mean, we're talking about almost 90% of aid comes directly from the U.S. So it's a country that's totally dependent on one country. So it's difficult to see how much of it is because of the corporation, how much of it is due to the aid. But, I mean, you could definitely see that people are worried about that. And they do, people were telling me it's important. We thought it was important for Zelaya to try to start developing partnerships with other people, because when the U.S. sneezes, we catch the cold. And even before the coup, because of the economic crisis, they had seen the remittances coming from the U.S. going down. So there was already a recession that was totally U.S.-driven. I think in that respect, that's what I can answer to that specific question. But of course, this whole, like when they joined the Bolivarian Association, I mean, there was as much, I think, support from the more popular classes than there was worries coming from the business elite to see all of a sudden this economic focus maybe switching, moving a little bit towards the south versus staying north.
Do you have any stories that struck you while you were there, tales that people told you from the popular neighborhoods of this recent history in Honduras? Because it's something that has caught a lot of attention across the Americas. Is anything that sticks out to you?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite story. I went to the main market in Tegucigalpa. And we sat there, and I just arrived, and I had my first plato típico for lunch. And so we started talking with the owner of this little cafe, this woman who was working 7 days a week, almost 70 hours a week, and just, you know, just to make a living. And we were asking her about the coup and what she thought and all that. And so I was considering her social background. I was expecting her to be pretty much against the coup, but she was in favor of the coup. And her story was, she was saying, well, we showed this president that if they don't do what we want, we can kick them out. And to me, that was the first indication. I mean, obviously, other people I talked to after that laughed, because it's not the population of Honduras that kicked the president out. It's not because they didn't like what he was doing. I mean, it's the army that took him out. But it just showed how this first coup in 20 years in Central America is putting so many other regimes in Latin America in danger. And I think that's the main story there. It's the domino effect that we could see, and I think that's what the international community need to look at. I think the story was there. What happens if the same thing happens in Brazil? Or, I mean, all countries of Latin America are so split still to 20 years after the end of the Cold War, between the left and the right, that what we saw in Honduras could happen again and again and again. And so a lot of people, like political analysts and things, were saying, well, that's the main worry we have about the international kind of lukewarm reaction to the coup, is that if we don't reverse it, this means that this could go on and on and on. And are we going to go back to Latin America of the 70s? I mean, I think that's the story I took back from my Honduras trip.
Last question. For Canada, for Quebec, how is the political situation in Honduras relevant? I mean, obviously on the ground, the United States is a much larger player, but Canada's policy in regards to the coup government has been somewhat supportive. The military aid packages continued to flow after the coup took place. But so I'm just wondering, specifically in regards to Quebec, in regards to Canada, how is the situation in Honduras important? What should we be considering here?
Well, there's two things. First thing, I have to say that everything I wrote about Honduras, in La Presse, I got very strong reaction by Quebecois who have link with Honduras. And I have a feeling that even from here, people have totally chosen one line or the other. So I was very surprised to have like very pro-coup Quebecois writing to me or very anti-coup Quebecois writing to me and totally taking a side, you know, and getting very angry if I wrote anything that they thought was, you know, positive about the effect of the coup. Not that I feel that I've done it, but it was interesting to see that the reaction in Canada was as polarized as it was in Honduras. So that to me was a first surprise. The second surprise was when I went to do a portrait of Pepe Lobo, who's the president-elect who will take power on 27th of January. And his family said, oh, you're from Canada. We really have to thank your government. They were the first one to recognize the election of Mr. Lobo. And I started laughing because I was like, well, you know, that's indicative of Canada. But then when I got back and talked to the Harper government, they were not so clear anymore about how much they supported his election and things like that. So I think Canada has been symptomatic of other countries at this very kind of unclear reaction to what happened in Honduras. I mean, this kind of, yes, maybe the election's a good thing, but maybe no, the coup was not a good thing. Like, it's amazing that no country that have links to Honduras have been able to take, except countries like Brazil and some countries in Latin America that have really gone against the coup. But Western countries in general have taken a very, very kind of careful approach in case they have to work with the next government. And I think that's, it's in that sense that the impact is going to be the greatest, is that now we know that the Pepe Lobo government, which was put in place by an election, has a bit their hand tied because he knows. I mean, I think the new administration knows quite well that the army and the regime that put them in place is never going to be very far away. And by not condemning totally the coup, I mean, Canada and other countries have been a bit complicit in letting the new government be in a very difficult position as well.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to you.
You've been listening to an interview with journalist Laure-Julie Perreault of Montreal's La Presse newspaper on the current political crisis in Honduras, where a military coup ousted left-leaning president Manuel Zelaya in June 2009. This interview has been produced for broadcast on CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stéphane Christophe.